This is WRD. I'm Larry King, and a great pleasure to welcome to our microphones Dr. Manfred Gutsky, host of the radio show The Bible for You, which is heard on over 100 stations in America, including WRD, every Sunday morning at 7:30. Dr. Gutsky is here from Atlanta. Do you have a pulpit in Atlanta, Doctor?
No, I am retired from the active ministry, and I'm just spending my time in connection with The Bible for You, which is, first of all, a radio program, and then we have a good deal of printed material we distribute.
How old is The Bible for You?
It's about 8 years old.
Did you start it upon retiring?
Yes. In fact, before I retired, it started, almost started itself. People just got interested in hearing my Bible teaching and wanted to spread it, so they began to put it on a local radio station. And then it picked up momentum and now has gone as far as this.
What element or area of the church were you a minister in? I mean, Baptist
Presbyterian time. Church. I was in the Presbyterian. I was on the Presbyterian church and was a professor in Columbia Seminary in Atlanta for 27 years.
Were you raised a Presbyterian?
No. Well, I'd say this. I was born a Canadian. And I became a Christian after I was a grown man, after being an agnostic. As a young man, I wasn't a believer at all.
Your parents believers?
No. They became believers after I did. I was the first one.
You were born in Canada?
Born in
Canada. Raised, and when you say late in life, discovered Christianity?
Well, I wouldn't say late in life, but in my, as a mature young man, I was out at a teaching school. My second year of teaching school, I came to believe that there was a God. I didn't, at first didn't even believe there was a God.
You were a teacher?
I was a school teacher.
Where?
Up in Manitoba, Canada.
What brought you to Atlanta eventually?
Well, eventually I came around to Atlanta primarily because of Columbia Seminary, which is located there, and they called me there from Texas where I had been. And
What kind of school were you teaching? Elementary?
Yes, I was in theology. I was teaching in... you mean originally?
Before you, yeah.
Well, originally, I was just teaching in public school.
Right.
And then I was a public school teacher, high school teacher, and then was intending to be a lawyer. And it was in the law office when I had the experience of coming to faith and felt it was such an amazing thing that I gave up the idea of my own occupation or vocation and gave myself over to just telling people about it.
Now, can you tell me what the experience was?
Well, it was a matter of just coming to believe what is commonly known as the gospel, but for me it was a matter of believing that this universe was created by a being who could help me to live if I let him get into my life.
Yeah, but why did you believe it? What happened one day in the law office?
Oh, well, that was just before I'd ever that came to pass, my own experience of satisfaction and joy and relief, just living so much better than I had before.
Yeah, but
I thought I ought to share it.
Did it just happen? No, I've, you know, we've talked to many, and I've interviewed Norman Vincent Peale and Billy Graham and others, all of whom had similar experiences, all of whom had, if not agnostic young lives, certainly doubting young lives.
Yes, yes.
And some call it a calling.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened? You know, the agnostic, the non-believer, always is interested in this because he imagines himself walking down the street. Suppose and I take the role of a devil's advocate, but let's say a... What could happen to me today that would cause me to be a total believer?
Well, I would say something like this. Out of my unbelief, I met an old farmer who did believe. And when he said he believed, and he believed that Jesus of Nazareth was alive, I thought he was crazy. And it got interested talking to him. And then thinking he really was wrong, I began to read the Bible that I had no confidence in, but began to read it to show this old farmer he was wrong. And that was really what opened my eyes, was reading the Bible itself.
Which version?
The King James Version, the only version we had back in those days.
All right. Why did you... You had never read the Bible before.
I read it. I went to Sunday school, and so I paid no attention to it.
Right. Why did you suddenly believe the book?
Well, it wasn't
as
so
opposed matter... Suppose I wrote a book and handed you and said, this is fact.
Well, it was a matter of reading it something like this. I suppose it'd be like this, as if you were looking at the wall, you thought you were looking at the wall, and suddenly you see your own face. It's a mirror. And suddenly you see your own face. And when I read the Bible and looked into it, suddenly I saw that this was true for me. And it went from step... And then there are personally inward experiences that you have. You begin to think to yourself, is it possible that there could be a God? And then I actually took time out to look up into the skies one night and just say, if you're there, you show me. Things began to happen after that. It was a matter of... Before that, I could say, as a young man, it's a matter of feeling an emptiness and uselessness about life. Just wasn't worthwhile. And then I wondered why in the world it would be like this. And then, of course, out of this vague uncertainty and uselessness came the thought that it might be. And then I met this man who seemed to have solved it. And from there, one step led to another.
The questioning, therefore, it has to be a real thing. It can't just be
words.
Oh,
yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. And listen, it wasn't because someone else said so. That's the last thing in the world. Although I went to church and I listened to the preacher and so on, I didn't go by what he said. I was waiting for something to click inside of me that would mean it was the truth.
The major difficulty you obviously had to overcome as an agnostic and as an educated man, right?
Yes.
Was virgin birth.
Well,
why did you accept it?
Oh, that's no problem. You see, when you come to think about it, as far as the virgin birth is concerned, the only real miracle there is in that is that the cell in the woman's body came alive. So if you step back two steps and ask yourself, how'd man ever come? You begin to realize that the creation of the first man was a far bigger problem than the virgin birth.
Yeah, but you had to throw out Darwin, though.
Oh, he was no problem.
Darwin, as an agnostic, you had to believe Darwin.
No, I didn't believe him.
You never believed him?
I did as a boy and as a young lad in high school. But I dropped him when I was in high school before I ever believed there was a God. Actually, so far as Darwin himself didn't believe his theory. And anybody that really knows the whole story of Darwin knows that if it had been left to him, he'd never published that book. There's friends of his that published it. Darwin told you there were the missing gaps. You heard of the missing links?
Right.
That's his word. He said there were links in there that wouldn't fit. And he didn't put them together. And I was a country boy. I grew up out in the country. And believe me, I just believed that oats bring forth oats and barley brings forth barley. You can't persuade me about this business that you can start out with a cow and get a horse. You just don't.
But you can start out with an orange and a tinge and something else and get a nectarine.
Oh, yes, but you see, you're manipulating that. And when you're all through, you've still got a direct connection. I went on all through this. But as I say, I picked up evolution in my high school days and dropped it in my high school days because there was no evidence. Much later, when I was doing my doctoral work at Columbia University in New York City, and I was there at the high top level academically in this whole field, they knew I didn't believe in it, they asked me to ask a question of the whole class, 175 graduate students, and I asked them one question. Give me one instance, just one example, and I want to tell you it can't be done. It just can't be done. And this is all carried on by folks who are not really acquainted with scientific facts. I have two sons, both of whom are scientists. One of them a physicist, the other a chemist. They both have advanced degrees in the field. Neither one of them would touch evolution with a 10-foot pole.
Therefore, the belief that there had to be some creation then makes it easy to believe that a cell could create...
Why, certainly. After all, we're here. And if you ever admit that the world is here, it come from something. Whoever did it, that's what we call God. If he did it that way, he could do it this way.
Why did you choose to accept Christianity as opposed to Judaism, Mohammedism, Buddhism, etc.?
Well, let's say, first of all, one reason why I came to it was the one that came to me. But afterwards, I compared them. And I want to tell you, after you compare them, they don't even match up. Mind you, as far as Judaism is concerned, it's got the basis. And they've got the outline. And if it came alive, you'd have them right in the Christian faith, and that's where they came from. Paul was a Jew.
Christ was a Jew.
And he was a Jew. And so far as the Jews are concerned, their basic beliefs are exactly mine. When I was in Columbia University, the men who stood nearest to me in the classroom discussions were Jewish rabbis. And the professor used to laugh at us, here you are, you're a Christian preacher, and those are Jewish rabbis, and you're standing right together. I said, well, they have the Old Testament. I stand on that, too. We just believe in and look in the same direction. Just exactly.
Who wrote the Bible?
Upwards of 40 different men. Nobody knows who. Mm. Over a period of over 1,000 years.
I'm sure you've heard this, but the agnostic says, wouldn't that be like taking today's Atlanta Constitution, Atlanta Journal, Miami Herald, Miami News, and 3,000 years from today?
Well, I'll tell you what I
saying
say
everything
to him.
In it was a fact.
I just say to him, just you put those all together and change men's lives with it. Just take people as derelicts that have been taken by any city mission and transform them into godly men. You try that, you'll find out something. No, the biggest, greatest, simplest way to understand about the Scripture is like medicine. It works. Believe me, it does things the others don't do. And it did it to me. I'm one of those that did it to me.
In a minute, I'll ask Dr. Gutsky about the program, The Bible for You, and how it can work for you, by the way. We'll also get into today's young people and what they seem to be searching for, and also the unusual aspect of the young people holding up Christ as a great political hero, which they do. This is WIOD. I'm Larry King. My guest is Dr. Manfred Gutsky from Atlanta. He is host of The Bible for You, heard on over 100 radio stations in America, including this one, WIOD, every Sunday morning at 7:30. Back after these words. This is WIOD. I'm Larry King. My guest, Dr. Manfred Gutsky, host of The Bible for You. Is this a preaching program, Doctor?
Yes, it's a Bible teaching program.
Teaching program.
Bible teaching program, yes.
In which you do what each week?
I take, for instance, just now I'm working in the Book of Romans. The material that you folks will hear on this radio station will be the book, studies from the Book of Romans. I simply try to take the scriptures as they are written and open them up for the average man in average man's language. My material is called Plain Talk About Bible Truth for Everyday Living. That's really the point.
Do you have anything to do with the Plain Talk magazine?
No, we just have the word. We use that language.
And the materials you publish deal with what?
They are all taken from my teaching. They're my own material. And always the idea is they're beamed at the person who is interested and would like to know. I don't take the time to go in for explanation. I don't answer moot questions that are raised and so on. I leave that for other people. I'm interested in the man who, in living, would like to know whether there is any help for him in living. I know there is, and I want to tell him about it.
Let's get to what might be, Dr. Gutsky, some of the most asked questions by the intelligent agnostic. And we'll not talk about the atheist who denies it completely.
Mm-hmm.
We'll take the agnostic who says, we thank God for things like the sunset,
mm-hmm.
like rain,
mm-hmm.
like the beautiful morning and the sunrise, and the organization of it all. Why don't we blame them for the earthquake and the hurricane? None of which could be man-caused.
Well, that's because the person who is doing that thing is allowing his mind to run in a long poetical line. He's not thinking very carefully. If he thought fairly carefully, he'd include the tornadoes. He'd include the earthquake. This has to be included in the whole picture. And so far as that man is concerned, he should see, when he looks at it, that in nature, which he thinks is so beautiful, there is no pity. I tell you, the bird with the broken wing, a cat gets it.
And why, though?
Why? There is no why. You never can get an answer to that. That's just the way it is. A man's inside the barrel. You can't see the outside of it. Man's inside this creation. You can't see the whole thing. For that, you'd have to know what God knows. Man doesn't know that much.
Right, but then why accept the Bible? You say, don't say why, but then why accept the Bible?
Well, because it meets you at your point. It comes and meets you at your need. You see, those of us who are as Christians, we feel that the total truth was seen in one person, Jesus of Nazareth. He spoke, and it was the case of my meeting him through the scriptures, and meeting him, I came to believe in him. This is really what made me what I am. Afterwards, I found a great many other things were involved. That was basic.
All right. Many of the kids today in the college campus who are obviously searching for something,
yes.
Correct? Searching more than maybe we did as kids,
yes.
In a true search sense.
Well, they admit it more.
Yeah, that's right. Admit it more.
Yes.
Really hold Christ up as a great political figure. They have that trouble going over that one step into belief as the Son of God.
Yes.
But they do hold him in fantastic esteem.
Yes, and that is a great danger because they miss the whole point. In his time, his neighbors, looking at him and seeing him as he is, couldn't understand how he could do the works that he could do. And he marveled at their unbelief. You see, seeing him as a human being is not really seeing him as he is. He came in human form. But looking at him in human form, you find eternal value. Now, they can lift him up man to man and compare him that way and will always be disappointed. As long as they're talking in the sense of the way a poet would see with his feelings or the way a politician would talk with his promises, they can go along. But when it comes to actual fact, the proof of the pudding for them is no peace in their heart. They follow, chasing a sunbeam. They never get there.
Christ was a protester, was he not?
Well, not in the sense they would speak of it. He protested against sham. He protested against...
hypocrisy.
Hypocrisy. But believe me, he had something underneath to offer. He had a real reality to offer. And one can feel sorry, sympathetic. I know exactly how they feel. I remember what it was like to be looking into the dark and looking and looking and imagining things. And I became so interested, I made my major in psychology just because I was interested in the human mind.
Why have, and I'm sure, Dr. Gutsky, every person who's ever had a pulpit faces this problem with his own congregation, Christian or otherwise. Why do so many of the believers really not believe? By that I mean, forgive us your debts.
Yes.
And people
forgive
don't do that. Why don't people?
We forgive our debts.
Why is the ex-convict frowned upon? Christ talked to and comforted Mary Magdalene. Yes. Society makes the prostitute an outcast. So why does that person in church on Sunday, in synagogue on Saturday, listen then, but on Monday get into this dog-eat-dog world?
Because he has never actually taken hold of what he was professing on that Saturday or that Sunday. You can do it. You can pretend it. You can fool yourself. You can think because you went there and said the words you had it. You didn't.
Right. Now, Billy Graham and Norman Peel both told me they felt because of this, organized religion is a failure.
Well, organized religion is a good deal like egg crates in which you transport eggs. And people make a mistake when they try to eat the crates. The eggs are good. The crates are only handy.
All right. Then there's something wrong with the way it's done, right?
Yes.
It's Sunday, right?
Yes,
it's not Tuesday.
People get into the way of going through the form and thinking because they went through the form of it that they had it. That wasn't it at all. The form of it was a container. When you have a person brings you a glass of milk, you drink the milk, you don't drink the glass. And the container is the glass. And it can be various sizes, shapes, and colors. But the milk is what feeds the soul.
Therefore, we have had wrong methods, or people have taken the wrong approach?
I would say yes. Quickly to that, I would say that. And it's a very human thing to do. It's very easy for people just to go by appearances and settle for appearances. But all the time that is true. In every generation, there have been people who have found out the truth, that when they really take it to heart, something happens to them that you can't put into words, something that is entirely new and different. We call it being born again. It has an entirely new view of the whole thing. Any man that is in Christ, we say, is a new creature, a new creation.
Is the change immediate?
It can be. It begins immediately. It's like a plant. You know, when it breaks out of the soil, it begins immediately. But it grows. You don't have it. It's just like a child being born. When the child is born, you call him John Smith, but when he's 21, you call him John Smith. The same guy, but he's not the same as he was when he was born. He's grown in the meantime.
More in a minute. My guest is Dr. Manfred Gutsky. He is host of The Bible for You. Dr. Gutsky comes here from Atlanta. This program of his, The Bible for You, is heard on over 100 American radio stations. Heard here on WIOD every Sunday morning from 7:30 to 8 a.m. This is WIOD. I'm Larry King. My guest is Dr. Manfred Gutsky, host of The Bible for You, and an outstandingly trained and understanding theologian. In talks with people like Dr. Graham and others, even those who were some of his critics, referring to a former Atlantan, Dr. Martin Luther King, Dr. Graham said that one of the things that Dr. King said in his last speech was something that every believer knows and every non-believer can't understand. And I'll tell you the statement he made, and you tell me what he meant. I have been to the top of the mountain.
Well, I expect that when that is used, that's the top of the mountain in biblical literature refers to a moment when you are, say, at the top of Mount Sinai, as Moses was, and meeting God. Nobody, no other human being at all. Or Elijah went to the top of the mountain. No other human being at all. It's a matter of standing alone, face to face with God.
You've had it.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Now, I noticed that when King said that,
yes.
The many people that nodded, the many more people that did not.
Well, those who have ever in their hearts confronted the living God and knew it, that's what they understood by that.
And therefore, you could never be afraid.
Oh, no, not, you know, unless you forget where you were, you know.
But, I mean, you can never really be afraid.
Oh, never really be afraid, because God holds all things in his hand.
All right, do you think that the kids use drug trips to find this top of the mountain?
I think they would hope they would. Perhaps they feel that this top of the mountain experience is one where they're taken out of themselves. And in that, they're right. But when they took it by this artificial method, the trouble with that is they flopped down again. The worst of that is that the mountain they went over was a precipice. They wound up in the bottom in a heap. But those who actually meet God face to face, they don't fall. They go on with him.
What is the feeling like?
Well, it is a matter of joy, of peace. It's a matter of just coming out of a lot of noise into quietness and peace. And coming away from a lot that is ugly and dirty into something clean and beautiful.
It's not intellectual, right?
What's that?
It's not intellectual.
Oh, no. It can have an intellectual form. But it's primarily something in the heart. Now, some people would call it emotional. It'll cause emotion, but it's more than that. It's deeper than that.
Yeah.
It's a consciousness.
Yeah, it's beyond the sentimentality.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It may cause sentimentality, but it is grounded in certain conviction. It's a certain conviction. You know this is true.
What does the minister say to the parent of the child who dies? A child dies. Now, that's kind of against nature.
You're
supposed to die before children.
Yeah.
What do you say?
Well, it depends upon the minister. If you were to ask me what I would say...
That's what I mean.
I would tell him, God gave you that child. God now has that child. That child wasn't thrown away. God gave the child, God left the child, God took the child. You didn't have him before, and you didn't really have him when he was here, and you haven't got him now. But God can have you, and I can say to them what David said. David said, after his child died, and he cleaned himself up, went on about his business, and people said, how can you possibly go on about your work now, when before you couldn't do a thing while the baby was just sick? Well, he said, now that he's gone, I know he won't come back here, but I know I'll go to be with him. This is what I would be talking to that parent about. And there's no way... And if I was just, someone was to say, well, you're going to try and explain to the parent why God took the child then? No!
Therefore, remove expectation and take things as gifts, right?
Yes, take them as gifts. And don't feel that you're going to work for them and that you're going to get what you deserve. You're going to get what God in grace and mercy will give you. And it's like Job said, the Lord hath given, the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord.
Right. How do you explain Hitler?
It's human. It's one of those human things. And every now and again among human beings, you can build things up, just like a storm in the weather situation. If you were to ask, you say, how can you explain a hurricane? Certain climate, certain weather conditions coming together in a certain way cause a hurricane. Well, certain social conditions and political conditions...
But what about all the people who either turned the other way or let him do the things he did?
Well, they had no more chance to stop Hitler than I would have... You'd have a chance to stop a hurricane. You can't stop that kind of thing.
People who question God, though, say, why did God allow Hitler?
Well, then you have to ask why God allows hurricanes. And I want to tell you, there's things going on I don't know why God allows. But I trust him.
Why? Now, where are
I trust him because he showed me that he gave his own son for me. And Paul says, if he spared not his own son, but freely gave him up for us all, how will he not with him also freely give us all things? When I consider, if someone was to say, how in the world would you idea that God would create a world like this? All I have to say quickly to that is, he sent his own son into it. I know it is bad, but he sent his own son into it. And he sent his son into it to save me out of it. And believe me, I'm glad he did. And the wonderful thing is, anybody could be. Believe me, we're not limited to this world. This is one thing you'll learn when once you believe in God.
What happens to you when the body dies?
Oh, you go to be with God.
In what kind of form?
Person to person and spiritual, which cannot be described, humanly speaking.
You don't believe
not limited
he's
to
a,
time
a,
or space.
Yeah, he's not a being in the heavens.
Well, you can put it that way, but the moment you and I gesture up into a place, we're already showing our own limitations. He is a person, and he has his presence, and you would be in his presence. The best way to put it is that it would be as if you were with a friend, a real close friend, forever. Go on with that. The best way I think of it is, if you can think of times when you've been with your friend, If you could raise that to the nth degree and make it everlasting, you'd have what I were talking about. But so far as description is concerned, it does not yet appear we shall be like. You can't describe.
We are taught, are we not, to try to move from our hearts greed, lust, anger.
Yes. Now, the way to do that, you can't do that by plucking it out like weed. You'd never get through. No, the way you do that is by putting your trust in Christ, and God does something that the Bible talks about being born again. And you reckon the old man dead. When you reckon your human nature and count it like dead, all these that you've described are with it. And you shed those.
Did not God have anger? Did not Christ have anger?
Yes,
the
there's
money
nothing wrong with anger. As such. No, there are some things in the world, if you weren't angry at, you wouldn't be right.
Or else we couldn't change bad things.
Well,
we didn't get angry at.
But even so, there are some things you can't even change. Because someone else is doing them, and they're not in your hands. But you can be angry at them. If you weren't angry at some things, you wouldn't be righteous.
No, you have to be angry about poverty before you can feed people, right?
Yeah, I guess maybe, if we can word that way. I'll say you're angry with greed, you're angry with envy, you're angry with dishonesty, you're angry with anything that's hurtful to another person. Now, when it comes to being angry about poverty, the best thing to do is reach in your pocket and hand out your money. That's the best way to do about that.
Let me ask you in a minute what I have no knowledge of, what God said about sex and love in the Bible. This is WIOD. I'm Larry King. My guest is Dr. Manfred Gutsky, host of The Bible for You. It is heard on over 100 American radio stations, including this one, WIOD, every Sunday morning at 7:30. This is WIOD, and we'll be back after these words. This is WIOD. I'm Larry King with Dr. Manfred Gutsky, host of The Bible for You. Since love is what a lot of this is all about, loving each other, since sex is the ultimate form of human contact, body contact, why is it bad? I mean, out of marriage or anywhere, why is it bad?
There's nothing bad about it. Nothing bad about it. Nothing more bad about that than there is about eating food or drinking drink. But you can get to the place where you can eat what'll hurt you, and you can get to where you can drink what will hurt you, and you can exercise yourself in these bodily contacts where you indulge yourself, and you act irresponsibly. There isn't anything bad in itself. You know, basically speaking, there's nothing unclean of itself. In fact, there, human, as you say, this is the way they were made, but they were made to be that way under control. There isn't anything in any direction you look that ever is of such a nature that you can do it indefinitely, infinitely, and keep on indulging yourself and it'd be good. No. Things are under control. And you know the old Bible story about the man and the woman being put in the garden, and right within reach was put a separated portion, a certain tree. Don't eat of it. Now, it was put within reach. Stop and think for a moment. God knew it was within reach of them, and the man knew it was within reach. And it was something that was good for food and pleasant to the eyes and so on, but he was told, don't. And this is the very essence of human character and becomes the essence of morality. Self-control. And then from that, all other good things come. But the lack of self-control is bad any direction you take it.
Do you think marriage as an institution is in trouble?
Well, marriage, as far as human beings are concerned, human beings are in trouble. Nothing wrong about marriage. But human beings are in trouble, and I can tell you, as far as we're concerned, it's something that belongs to this world. There's no marriage in heaven. It belongs to this world. Now, that doesn't mean it's bad, because in this world there are lilies just as well as there are cesspools. But they're both in this world. And they can be good, they can be bad.
Do you accept, Dr. Gutsky, the Bible literally? Did Elijah get in the chariot and ride into the sky?
Yes, sir. I see no reason to doubt that. I see no reason to doubt that. I take it as it reads.
And a lot of people have a difficulty with that.
Oh,
I know. It as meaning other things.
Yes, I know. And it does mean many other things. But believe me, basically, it's just exactly as it reads. Just the same as I look out in the universe and I think the world's there. And I see myself here and I think I'm here. Philosophically, you can get to where you can doubt everything. But from a practical point of view, believe me, when I put my stub my toe against the chair, I think the chair was there. And these things. So there is a reality, a basic reality. And so far as the scriptures are concerned, I know there are things in there that are beyond human grasp. But what do I mean by that? Beyond my experience. Well, of course. My experience is a good deal like stepping out here on the shore and looking out across the Atlantic Ocean. I look on the Gulf Stream, the Atlantic Ocean. I can't see it all. But what I see is the Atlantic. And here's the amazing thing. If I tasted it and then took a half teaspoon in my mouth, it would be salty. And from there to the end of space, as far as I can see, it's salty all the way through. That little taste I got was of the whole business, even though what I saw went beyond me. Well, if that's true about the Atlantic, it's true about life as a whole. There'll always be things that go beyond me.
Are there contradictions in the Bible?
I don't think so. Not long ago, as an agnostic, I used to be prepared to think that. But I must say that not long ago, I was asked to speak to a leading university. And they challenged me to come in as a believer in the Bible and face questions, which I did. And I told them, I said, you folks will naturally wonder how I stand on the Scriptures. And so I suggested to them that if they could find one place where they could show that any one part of the Bible contradicts any other part of the Bible in a way that could be established in an open court of pure logic, just show it to be so, I'd give them $5. This is talking to students. I also invited them to find one single statement in the Bible that would contradict any known fact of science. And if they could find that, I'd send them $5. Just send them to me. My name is in the phone book. That's been years ago. No one's ever called me.
Einstein, did he not, to the end of his life, believe in a creator?
I expect he did. He certainly had the evidence. He was studying
nature. He could find no pure scientific basis to prove the beginning of it all. Therefore, some power greater had to begin it.
Yes. And this is a very normal thing. And Einstein, by that, showed himself to be a strictly normal man.
Would life on other planets, if that is ever discovered, disprove anything the Bible
can?
No, it would not.
No, it wouldn't. Because, after all, what the Bible is for us, here. It doesn't attempt to tell us everything, everywhere. There's a whole lot more to God than the Bible shows. But the Bible shows enough to God for me, for my sake. It is for me. It is like medicine. When someone gives me a dose of medicine, he's not giving me all the drugs in the world. He's giving me what's going to do good for me. And this is the way it is with the Scripture.
When you study other religions, right?
Yes.
Is it essential to study comparative religions?
It isn't essential, but there's no harm in it. You can look at it. You'll just be amazed. All the religions in the world are forms of human interest and human purposes. That's why they're so much alike. Because they come from human beings, and human beings are alike. You'll find many things that are common to all of them. But there's one thing that you won't find in any one of them that you go to. And that is that a human being on earth can have personal fellowship with the Creator. You don't get that. You have, even some of them will talk about meeting him afterwards, but they won't meet him here now.
What about the people who did not believe in Christ, but who were Christ-like? Gandhi.
Well, so far as they're concerned, you might say that...
I can't find anything wrong Gandhi ever did.
Well, I don't know.
He never had lust.
We can just say there's nothing reported of him that's wrong.
Okay.
As far as I'm concerned, I'll buy it.
All right, based on what we know of Gandhi.
On what we know. The only thing that I have to say about that is that everything that you find, even in the life of Jesus of Nazareth, was always possible within human beings. And some have it more and some have it less. The thing that we have in our Christian faith is we get the grace of God to actually have that reproduced in us who aren't strong. We're not in ourselves so exceptionally capable. And we don't have deep and profound philosophical ideas. But we have a faith in Him and He works it out in us. So far as those people are concerned, I would say about them that they show, a man like you've mentioned here, he shows the capacity of human beings. That is there. And the only thing is that even if you were to go even more closely and really study him as he is in his own country, and then compare it with any another typical case of a Christian, you'd find differences.
Do you believe Gandhi is with Christ now?
Oh, I wouldn't know that.
Wouldn't
know. And I'd be no judge.
Do you believe you have to believe to be with him?
I would say yes. And just because, and I'll tell you one thing I have as far as Gandhi is concerned. With all that he knew of Jesus of Nazareth, he never did acknowledge him to be his Lord. As far as I'm concerned, he and I are walking two different roads. We're walking on two different roads. Because I, too, was an unbeliever. And I, too, met Jesus of Nazareth. And I came to believe that he actually was the Son of God. And this, so far as they report, I never met Gandhi. But so far as they report, he never believed that. He and I are going on two different roads.
Unless, of course, as some might think, he did believe at death.
It could be, but this is a hopeful thing, and one hates to be a judge of another. I hope it would be true. It would be glad. I'd be glad to think it was true. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised if it had been, because it's very hard for anybody who has an open mind and studies and then sees Jesus of Nazareth. It's very hard to shake him out of your mind, but I'll tell you, he has a way of getting to you.
Why is so little known of Christ's early life?
It wasn't important. You couldn't ask a better question. It wasn't important. And when you hear today about all this talk about educating up into, there's no report of that with reference to Jesus Christ. The point is, he was born the Son of God, and the big thing about him is that he lived it out in his public ministry. And actually, what he was as a child, what he was as a young man, had no bearing on the actual service that he rendered.
Was he a carpenter?
I don't know. The only people that ever called him a carpenter in the Bible were his enemies.
I see. Paul never referred to him.
No, Paul never did. Nobody that ever believed in him ever called him that. His enemies called him a carpenter. And I expect that's like calling me a farmer because my father was a farmer. Maybe he did work in the carpenter shop. The Bible doesn't say so.
This is this great thing that has been given us, Christianity. Jim Bishop wrote a book called The Day Christ Died. And researching that book, by the way, everything checked out, and all the research and the places he went and all this thing, came to a conviction that we should also love Judas, because Judas had to be part of the overall concept. He had to do what he did in order for God to give up his child, right?
Well, I'll tell you this. I'd be no man's judge.
Christ loved him, though, didn't he?
What's that?
Christ loved him.
Oh, sure, he loved him. He loved everybody. But believe me, it says about Judas in the Bible that he went to his own place. The implication is it was different. And as far as I'm concerned, I don't have any word to speak about that. We're not given any word about that.
Do you believe in a hell?
Oh, yes. The one person who talked more about it in the Bible than anybody else is Jesus of Nazareth. Any number of people would make you think that they want to believe in, we'll say, in Jesus of Nazareth, and they don't believe in hell. Well, believe me, the one person who spoke more about hell and who spoke about fire not being quenched and so on, it was Jesus of Nazareth. Just simply is a word that sums up ultimate destruction.
Do you believe in a devil?
Oh, yes. He tempted the Lord. The Lord Jesus dealt with him, and he actually tempted him. Here is a Satan, yes, sir.
Then Satan has some powers that are as great as God's in many senses.
He has whatever power God lets him have. And they're greater than mine, believe me. I don't make fun of him. He's someone I'm, as far as I personally am concerned, I wouldn't want to meet him in the open road. I'll tell you the greatest thing. Let me tell you the greatest thing about Satan. Is this little line. That Satan trembles when he sees the weakest saint upon his knees. Our safety is in Christ, not because we're smarter than the devil.
How many people, Dr. Gutsky, do you estimate listen to the Bible for you every day across America?
I wouldn't know about that, but we have, I would say, right now, more than 75 million people within the easy range of our radio station. And if you cut that in half and say, even cut it to two-thirds, then take 25, one out of three, that'll give you 25 million.
Do you hear from lots of them?
Oh, yes. We have over 40,000 people on our mailing list.
Do you have offices set up in Atlanta?
In Atlanta, we have an office.
Do you tape at a radio station in Atlanta?
Yeah, we have our own studio.
You do, you have your own.
I have our own studio, our own equipment. And then
you mail tapes all over the country.
Yes. Actually, we work through an agency in Wheaton, Illinois to distribute them. But we make the tapes in Atlanta.
And this started just as a local program.
As a local program. I'll tell you how it got started. I myself wanted my brother in Canada to hear the gospel. And I don't want to identify more than just to say that it wasn't being preached. I know because I lived there. And I wanted him to hear it. So I went up to a radio station, first one I ever went to in my life, walked in and asked the guy, "Let me sell myself to you." He said, "What do you mean?" I said, I want to get on the radio station here. My brother's within 30 miles, and I want him to hear. My father had left me a small legacy in his will, and I used that money to buy my first radio time so my brother could hear the message. That's how it got started. And then the first radio station in this country we went to in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and that was sponsored by a doctor who had been an alcoholic. And that doctor, as an alcoholic, had been blessed through listening to me preach and had been delivered from alcoholism. And he came to me and said, Gutsky, isn't there some way we could spread that among other people? Can't I put this on the radio? That started us there. And to this day, he personally pays for, daily and Sundays, that radio station in Chattanooga and continues to have people listen. It's just tremendous. But this happens elsewhere. But that's how it got started.
What station are you on in Atlanta?
In Atlanta, I'm on two stations. The biggest station we're on is WGUN. And then we're also on WAVO.
Do you ever get the chance to preach in a pulpit anymore?
Oh, yes.
Visiting...
Yes, I should say so. Our problem is this. The last time I sat down with my manager, he and I sat down to this. We had, within the next 6 months, or a year and a half, really, we had an opportunity of going four places with our schedule. We had 23 invitations, and our problem was to pick them.
What brings you to Miami?
To speak at the Shenandoah Presbyterian Church, because John Fain, the new pastor down there, is one of my former students, and he got me hooked to come down here, and I was glad to come. Another good reason I'm coming is because of my friend right here with me, Larry Alsterbrook of the First Presbyterian Church, who helped to get me down here and get me on with you people.
Didn't we give you wonderful weather?
Oh.
You came here for the winter and found it.
Yes, I should say so.
It do get pretty cold in Atlanta, though.
Oh, it's colder right there than it is here right now.
You have many students now with pulpits across the country, former students?
I'd say that possibly as many as 400 men are in the ministry today who were my students.
How good was Columbia University in teaching theology?
Well, now, you're speaking of Columbia University or Columbia Seminary?
Well, either one. You were at both, weren't you?
Oh, yes. But Columbia Seminary is in Atlanta. Columbia University, of course, in New York City, and I didn't take theology there. I studied philosophy.
How good was that? I took an academic course. How good was it?
It's good. Columbia University is a top-ranking institution.
Is the Columbia Seminary good?
It's good, Stacy. It's a grade-A seminary. Yes, sir.
Do we need more of them? Are more young people coming to the ministry or less?
It's hard to answer that. Actually, so far as the, shall I say, the organized church is concerned, they're having trouble because of the falling off of candidates for the ministry. But so far as independent work is concerned, there are any number of people. For instance, a seminary like ours would think it was fortunate to have had 100 students. But there are Bible institutes with 600 students. You see, it's a different interest that people have, for the time being, temporary.
Great pleasure meeting you.
Thank you. It's been wonderful to talk to you.
My guest has been Dr. Manfred Gutsky from Atlanta, Georgia. He is host of the program The Bible for You. He's here in town for the Shenandoah Presbyterian Church. And to appear on this program, The Bible for You is heard every Sunday morning at 7:30 on WIOD. We hope you have gotten a better look at the man who you hear every Sunday.